It's Friday, which means it's time for the Political Power Hour on Point Taken, where the left and right go head-to-head on this week's top stories and issues. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride. Should we talk about
the government? Oh, welcome. Where's that breaking news sounder?
Wow.
Sarah Rodriguez, gone! We said that basically her career was over, right?
It is it's a weird feeling of, I feel like yesterday we were basically saying there's no way forward. Everyone, a lot of people, at least I was hearing, no way forward. And yet it still feels surprising.
Wild.
And big news that as of this morning, Sarah Rodriguez has officially suspended her campaign.
In the room where it happens, Joseph Pecky, Democrat strategist, who is a fireball today, and corporate counsel for IRG, Institute for Reforming Government, Jake Curtis, representing the on assignment Bill McCosh. And go to you first, Democratic strategist Joseph Pecky. Sarah Rodriguez drops out, which I think is three candidates now that have dropped out in recent times. What do you make of this developing news?
What was the Marshawn Lynch statement? I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Right.
That's kind of how I feel right now.
Okay.
Right. What a week this
a
Democratic
week.
Primary has been.
Those wacky Democrats.
Listen, this is happening in real time. It's like 10, 15 minutes old. I'm not going to say anything badly about Sarah Rodriguez. She has been a good lieutenant governor. She was running a good campaign. She was delivering a message I think people needed to hear. And in my entire career, my more than 25 years doing this, I've never seen or heard of or even had a nightmare about a campaign manager just inventing dollars on a spreadsheet. I've heard about campaign managers like dipping into the kitty and stealing campaign funds.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard about it. So this is literally unprecedented. And I think Rodriguez did what she had to do, which was to try to weather it and put the best foot forward. And it didn't work. Right. And so now we're down to four.
Do you think you know what happened in this case?
I don't think anyone does.
Do you think Sarah Rodriguez knows?
I think she's learning more every day. And I think this is pure speculation, but the only way I can wrap my head around the U-turn in the last 48 hours is they may have uncovered some additional things that make this even worse than it was there. Yeah. So this story is not over because this is some type of fraud or malfeasance. I will bring in lawyer Jake to help me understand whether there might have been crimes committed here, civil or otherwise. But what I heard Lieutenant Governor say is the right thing, which is she doesn't want this to be a cloud over the election this fall. And that's my reminder to Democrats. We have an opportunity to win actual power. Don't lose sight of that.
Jake, is it a cloud?
It's certainly a problem. I mean, to echo Joe's point, I actually have at least one of her campaign finance pages up right now. Apparently, okay, so I saw this on Facebook, and immediately I knew it was true. I'm like, that's odd. I actually pulled her campaign finance report, and in this case, the Facebook post was accurate. Apparently, her campaign made a payment to the Wisconsin Federation of Republican Women for $1,500.
Well, no, it said it. So this is what. Yeah, this was weird, but it said it in the line item. But that group said that they never received a donation, and it was actually to the Milwaukee County Democrats. So I don't know what number or where it got misreported, but they actually came out publicly and said that they never received money.
It's still an error.
And when the group comes out and says we never received it, it calls into question. And so if there's an explanation for that, then maybe you can alleviate that problem. But to Joe's point, there are so many questions here. Even the money on hand initially was 200, then it was 34, 35.
And now it's 600
and now
plus.
It's 600.
No, it's back to 35.
Now it's back to, because yeah. They sent out a clarifying statement last night. Now it's back to 35.
I'm pretty sure the latest was it was back to 35.
And look, we've all been involved, I'm sure all of us in this room have been involved in campaigns, and I have been up till midnight working on a campaign finance report to make sure it's accurate. And, you know, maybe you missed a $50 donation from the neighbor down the road, but this is a whole different league of problem.
And I guess that's my question, because obviously when you're fundraising as the candidate, you're the one picking up the phone and dialing for dollars, right? And so to think that you have raised, even if you're not checking the bank account, but to have thought, I've raised $1.5 million, and like even just the consciousness of how many people have I called? What did I get as commitments? Like, it just feels like, how common is this to just have one person and like as the candidate not be checking the bank account, not be checking anything that is beyond what your campaign manager is telling you?
That's where the mistake was made, is that you didn't have a system of financial controls in place that multiple people were looking at the account. To the first part, like any organization or business, there are multiple revenue streams. You make a good point about the dialing for dollars the candidates have to do, but they don't have as the same level of visibility into the direct mail fundraising stream, okay, into the online low dollar fundraising, into the, hey, you got a commitment from a PAC or a conversation that sounds like a labor union's going to write a big check to you. Hey, campaign manager, now go actually physically collect the check and whether or not it comes through or not.
The person responsible for this is Kara Spencer, who was the individual that I assume Sarah Rodriguez or her staff hired. What do we know about her?
She's a pro. She's not a kid. I don't know her well. I interacted with her some last year. It's just shocking. I don't even know how else to say it, right? Like, I don't think anyone knows other than Kara whether this was, what the motives were here. Whether the world will find out remains to be seen. I just want to put a word in for, people go through stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like this, when people make choices, is really hard and can be incredibly isolating. And there's a process in place now that's going to play out. And I just want Kara and people who care about her to know that, like, she's still a person. And we should all remember that.
Quick comment, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, and the elephant in the room, no pun intended, is Tom Tiffany, who is, I think, really the person that is in the strongest position right now. In this environment, yeah, it may be a tough year for Republicans, but if you're Tom Tiffany, you're sitting on, what, $8 million?
Lots of money.
With a fractured Dem field. The leader is probably a pretty extreme candidate, I think, in the eyes of a lot of Wisconsin voters and Francesca Hong. So if you're Tom Tiffany, you are sitting in a really strong position right
great
now.
Great way to segue up what happens in this race. Jake Curtis, corporate counsel for IRG, Joseph Pecky, Democratic strategist, Pecky Communications, Kristen and Steve, point taken, Friday edition. Right here on 620 WTMJ. We are breaking down the breaking news. Sarah Rodriguez, the third candidate in recent times to drop out of the Democratic race for governor. Texter 92 on mentioning one of the other candidates who I'll actually have in later on. I'll talk about later on the show. Joe Brennan is a rising candidate with experience and professional demeanor. He's fresh and represents hope. He's also a moderate, which I don't know the other candidates qualify.
But there's also now, at least on Twitter, as things are moving very quickly, talks about what would it take for David Crowley to get back in the race?
I think it'd be really, really difficult.
Right?
I think this would be some wish casting. The idea of saying, I don't have a path to victory, of having to show a financial report, because we saw financial disclosure reports, including for the candidates who dropped out.
Yeah.
Still got a file. Right? And so the reason that Crowley and Hughes got stuck is they couldn't build sustainable fundraising operations, is what it looks like to me. David went from raising like 600 to like 250. Missy was down to like 150. You have to be able to win support from people who are willing to give you, whether it's $5 or 500, money to put gas in the tank.
So there's rumors now, potentially, like if Evers were to actually endorse someone, how much of that would make a difference? Whether it's Crowley,
if he pulled
or whether
Ben Wickler and said, I'm not going to endorse, and then decided to.
Yeah, I mean, as far as trying to, with how you're to use your word, fluid.
Yeah.
Everything is right now. A Tammy Baldwin, a Mark Pocan, a Tony Evers, like if someone kind of felt like they needed to come in and give voters guidance, would that make a difference?
I would caution any elected Democrat who has not weighed in on this race from doing so in the next 25 days. One of the things that voters are reacting to is an establishment, and I think this goes for both sides. Jake can check me on the right, but I think the public is sick and tired of politicians thinking they know best and making their lives harder, not easier. And so I think there's, I think that's wrapped up in the rise of Trump and the anti-establishment right. And I think it is fair to say that it is failures on the left within the establishment that have led to the growth in support for Francesca Hong. So it's a two-person race, in my view. I've long had Mandela Barnes as the front runner.
You said that from day one.
And I've said for the last few weeks it was a three-person race. Now one of those people is out. So I think this is down to Mandela and Fran.
So you don't see any opportunity for one of the other candidates to step up in the absence of Sarah Rodriguez?
I think it is extraordinarily difficult to put together the degree of resources it would take. You can't go from 2 or 4% to the 25 or 30% it's going to still take to win this thing with a couple of $100,000. You need millions.
Is Fran Hong going to go from 15 to 30?
I don't know. And this is the other really frustrating part of this, is that sometimes we have to sit with uncertainty and nobody knows anything.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of polls that have been fielded, including a Marquette Law School poll that stopped calling the other night and is going to be released next week. And it's now meaningless.
Yeah.
Jay Curtis, on Tiffany's side, what's their strategy now?
Well, I think Joe is making a good point that patience right now and just letting this play out is probably the only strategy. So I'll correct myself. Tiffany raised $8.7 million. He has $3 million in the bank, which is still a significant number. You look at some of these other numbers. Barnes, 204 cash on hand. Hong, 410. Brennan with about 350, 360.
They will get more money, whoever the candidate is.
They will get more money, but this is where, and this is, you know, I guess maybe I'll punt it back to Joe after I'm done, because the question in my mind is the big money, are the Reid Hoffmans of the world, like I'm assuming on the left, they're just waiting. As you said, they're just waiting to see how this plays out. Whereas Tiffany has been able to just really not take any hits, raise funds. I mean, he at $8.7 million, he outraised the entire Democratic field. The Republican Governors Association has come in with a big ad that apparently is undermining democracy. But they're basically just pointing out that, look, Fran Hong is a socialist and she wants to defund ICE. Now, the problem from the left standpoint is that was a negative ad. I think it actually plays well in Dane County and Waukee County, because a lot of people are going to say that, you know what, I like that. That's my candidate. That's the problem for the left right now, is even a negative ad, frankly, probably does play well in Dane County and Milwaukee County, because right now the energy is, and I agree with Joe, if the primary is held today, it's between Barnes and Hong. I don't see Brennan as relevant at all. You know, my former friends at the big law firms down here, they all like Brennan. Your average Madison college student or activist, they're not with Brennan, they're with Hong.
Look, I'm not who he is.
I'm not a Democrat, but he's got an opportunity on July 28th to tell people who he is. He is a moderate in this race. He is somebody that crossover votes would certainly go toward. They're not going to vote for Fran Hong in a actual election. That's his opportunity. And whether he seizes it or not, who knows?
That is the next moment, because the Marquette Law School poll that comes out next Wednesday is now meaningless.
Yes.
The debate.
They're in the field now.
They stopped calling 2 days ago.
Right.
The debate on the 28th is now going to be a better debate. When you got 6-7 people up there, it's hard.
Yeah, for an hour.
But if you're down to 4, that will be a really good exchange.
All right, we'll take a break. Joseph Pecky, Jake Curtis, Kristen and Steve, Point Taken, Friday edition. Thanks for joining us. We'll take these 3 minutes, 2 minutes, actually, just sort of wrap this comment. We're going to move to the president's address after the bottom of the hour news. I mean, I looked up Sarah Rodriguez's resume because I was on the afternoon show with John and Julia yesterday. I wanted to kind of know where she came from. Brilliant woman, healthcare executive, obviously, now you told me a PhD in nursing, apparently. Yeah. Lieutenant governor, good run under Tony Evers. How does this happen at this stage of a campaign? I'm sorry, you're the leader of the campaign. You delegate, certainly, but how does this happen to this degree to someone who is, many people considered, a front runner?
Well, and I'll ask, because I said this yesterday, I don't see her as having a future in Wisconsin politics after this. Do you?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Listen, she trusted the wrong person.
Yeah.
And it's not like this is somebody she hired, you know, off the street or didn't know. It's someone who had been with her for years. And that it is easy for me to see why someone who has been with you for years and has been a grown up worked well for you and with you, that you keep that trust in somebody. And oops.
Give me the corporate counsel view of what this feels like.
Look, no, I think it's a fair point you're raising, Steve, and that is you have two, and I'll put my spin on it, you have two really accomplished people in Brennan and Rodriguez who have the credentials, who I think 5, maybe 10 years ago would have clearly been the front runners in this race. And I just keep making this point, right, because I think it's so significant. The base of the Democratic Party has completely shifted in a few short years where Hong, who apparently has to have her parents pay off her credit card debt at, you know, 30, 35 years old, and then Barnes, who hasn't really accomplished in as far as in the professional world or anything of, you know, kind of real value. But those are your two front runners, and somebody like Rodriguez and Brennan are kind of afterthoughts. I think that's very telling of where the party is at right now.
Quickly on Kelda Royce, I haven't really mentioned her a lot. She can pick up some votes here.
Sure,
she's a polished.
I feel like anything can happen at this point.
Yes, yeah. If
maybe
the last
that's the message.
Because
days
that's the thing. It's like, as we said, a lot of donors have stayed on the sidelines, and so if someone came in with a bunch of money to put their finger on the scale, I mean, that could still happen.
Exciting race with less than 30 days to go. All right, after the break, the president gave a speech. Did anybody watch this thing? And I'll hand out some kudos to some networks who had some, what can I say, cojones?
I think you can say that.
I hope so, because I just said it out loud. I saw Jazz looking at me. I'm sure we'll get back to the breaking news on the governor's race. Sarah Rodriguez out. Now some swirling commentary about what David Crowley, county executive, Milwaukee County, might do. And so we have, what do we have, 4 candidates right now, and maybe have 5 again, and obviously the big event, Matt Smith, breaking tons of news. We love our Matt Smith. He's here every Monday. He's going to be here for a full hour Monday. Boy, do we have anything to talk about on Monday?
Seriously.
Hello, Matt Smith, Channel 12 political director. All right, the President of the United States got on a microphone yesterday and a teleprompter, and we'll get to that teleprompter thing in a bit, too. That, hello, Kaushi, advanced knowledge, making money. Anyway, Jake, you're a Trump supporter. Get your mic on there, buddy. Corporate counsel, please turn on your mic.
It's on.
It's on. Right. It's now on.
It's now on.
I think you have voted for him. I'm not sure. You've been pretty clear that was never your first choice in primaries.
Let me speak for you, Jake.
Correct.
You're smart. You don't support everything the president does. You don't support most things that most people do because you use your brain and you assess things based on common sense, logic,
facts.
I hope
your wife is listening to this.
You're
probably not.
Let me add this. Your lucky wife. How about that? What's your wife's first name?
Right.
What's your wife's first name?
Heidi.
I hope you're Heidi, if you're not listening, what the hell are you doing on this Friday? Get on the radio. If you're friends of Heidi, get on the radio. Where is she? Anyway, she's probably a busy, very busy woman. All right. You are someone who has supported Trump in the past. Do you think the president helped this argument about election security, the Save America Act, or whatever the hell he calls it? Was that a positive for the argument that some conservatives are making about the protection of a very important election coming up in November?
Okay, so I'll unpack all that. I think the Trump administration has advanced some very positive policies at the federal level. I think they're missing some opportunities right now, in particular, when it comes to affordability. I mean, all the polling IRG does and many other groups show that going into this fall's election, the issues that people care about are the basic kitchen table issues. I mean, literally kitchen table in the sense that groceries are expensive, fuel is expensive, and you know there are multiple factors.
Insurance
that go
is
into
expensive.
That. Insurance is expensive, and let's be honest, right? This was the issue during the Biden administration, and this is now an issue during the Trump administration, and that's really what this administration should be focusing on. I was actually talking to a friend yesterday, and somehow the address came up, and they just didn't understand why this was happening, and so I think it's a missed opportunity. That being said, when it comes to election integrity, you know, one interesting thing I noticed following the speech last night was Senator Warner out of Virginia. His response was, well, all this information is publicly available. And I thought that was interesting because if you kind of juxtapose that against kind of the position that Dems are taking where DOJ has been trying to seek some of these files from the states, their position there is, well, these are such sensitive files, we are going to, you know, use every legal maneuver we can to oppose this. Like, well, wait a second.
You think that information should be public?
It is public.
I mean, beyond what it is already.
Okay.
Is it or is it not?
Let's figure out if you just don't get all this or if you're being disingenuous. Because the difference is most states' voter rolls are public.
Correct.
You or I could go and, you know, pay a nominal fee and get them. We can look up information online at MyVote. Okay? Mm-hmm. Those are state run. Mm-hmm. And elections are administered by the several states, is got to be the language somewhere. What the states are objecting to is the federal government trying to take more power over elections and usurping.
How? I've read the complaints in this case.
They want access to the information. Is that they are trying to build a national voter database to use for purposes other than having elections, than administering elections.
That is making multiple layers of assumptions.
But you're making assumptions about why, like, that's what this is.
So let's just assume.
So what does the SAVE Act do that is
important?
This guy needs to waste everybody's time for 25 minutes. Are we talking about the SAVE Act or the litigation, Joe?
Right now, you're mixing two different things, right? What I was talking about was the fact that the response from the Democratic Party yesterday was like, these are ridiculous claims. And again, I think that the focus should be on real kitchen table issues. But if we're going to look at election integrity, like ensuring, for example, that elections are actually being the participants of elections are actually citizens, which 70% of Wisconsinites voted to amend the Constitution in 2024. And that's a popular position.
Oh, my God. Go check the Heritage Foundation research on how little in-person vote fraud there is in this country and how many non-citizens actually try to vote. It is a fraction of a fraction of a percent. And this is why I'm so pissed off right now that you cannot even have a conversation about this 2020 election or all the election integrity without sounding like a lunatic. And Donald Trump, crybaby in chief, is the one who did this to us. Shut up. He lost. He came back and won, but he can't even just take the W for the rest of his days on this mortal coil. He will be whining about how he was cheated.
All right.
I think he should be changing the narrative.
Jake, take a break. Joe, Jake, Kristen, Steve, take a break. You can respond to that after this on Point Taken. Rocking and rolling on a Friday. Joe Zepecki and Jake Curtis, Corporate Counsel, IRG, and for Bill McCauchy, who's on assignments. All right, before you jump in, I just want to read these two texts. It shows for the world that we live in. Stop yelling, Joe.
Good note.
You got a couple of those. And then you go, Joe, and this is coming from I'm reading exactly as it's written now, from a former Republican who is now an independent because I will not support anyone who talks as if Donald Trump is sane. Not my words. He was driven mad by losing in 2020. Read his biography. His father taught him that the worst thing in the world was to be a loser. Jake, you can now respond to what Joe said before the break.
Yeah, well, I think I responded. I think this is a missed opportunity by the administration to talk about the things that people care about. That being said, if you're actually going to try to break down the speech, I think the Dem response was somewhat incoherent when you look at kind of the nationwide legal landscape and what is happening with some of these voter rolls. Look, at the end of the day, I guess my point is, again, you can ignore this fact. We had a constitutional amendment. 70% of Wisconsinites, in a year that a progressive won on the Supreme Court, by the way, care about citizenship. And if that's what the motivation is, then let's have that discussion.
So what do you want? Like, what do you want to see happen, you personally, as far as our elections? Like, what do you want to see change that would make you feel more confident?
I think any review of – so I think what DOJ is doing – to actually review the voter rolls is not an unreasonable thing to do. Like, I mean, think of it like an audit. What is the problem with actually
reviewing
the... Here's
my problem. Voter rolls are fluid. All I care about is the end result, and that I know that the clerks of Wisconsin and almost every state across this country,
Steve,
they verify this stuff. Voter rolls are going to move around. People move. People die.
What do you think that they're going to find, or what are they going to do?
So, anytime there's an issue, right, we kind of, like, gloss over. We know WEC was about, you know, 6 to 8 months behind in actually updating same-day registration and voter rolls. Like, that happened. So, like, there's an area where, okay, maybe let's review that. And frankly, to Steve's point, this is an ongoing, iterative process. So why don't we have an ongoing review of that? That's all. I mean, I think anybody who cares – well, like, we're in this world now. Anybody who cares about election integrity is some crank.
No, just a crazy stuff.
And that's essentially what the argument is. No, that's what the argument is.
But it is Trump.
And I don't consider myself in that camp. I care about election integrity. And it should be an ongoing review by WEC that we know has dropped the ball on multiple occasions.
And I will give you this. Yes, election integrity matters. But what Donald Trump and the MAGA right have done has undermined the actual discourse over election integrity. And this is the point I was trying to make. Many listeners will be familiar with the Charlie Day meme from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, standing in front of the corkboard pin things. And the point I was trying to make before the break is Donald Trump is so nuts on this stuff that to even engage in trying to have a sane conversation, you also sound and look like Charlie Day.
Well, I mean, frankly, Joe, you're kind of making my point that if one disagrees with the Trump administration on some of their efforts in election integrity, then frankly, anybody who cares about election integrity is a crank.
But that's essentially what you're just saying. 11,870 votes. So that's not election integrity.
So yesterday, Jay Clayton, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, where Jay Clayton, for the, like, Trump's pick for the intelligence director, could not give a clear answer on who won the 2020 election.
He was asked multiple times.
And so, like,
Trump doesn't
like it. This infects a lot more than just Trump's, you know, neuroses about
this. It's the dumbest thing that Republicans/conservatives do is not directly, with a one-word answer that question.
I don't disagree.
It's stupid. And I know a lot of conservatives, like friends, family, neighbors, golf partners, they say, and they're Trump supporters, it's just stop doing this stuff. It makes us, I'm speaking for them, seem stupid. And I don't know how else to tell people that. You can believe that there are problems in elections, and here's the reality. There probably are some slight problems because nothing's perfect. Systems are different across states. We vote in different ways. There are city clerks, county clerks, they make mistakes. We know that happened in Green Bay and other places. That's the reality. You're never going to get to a perfect world. But I know that when there's court cases, and I know when independent organizations look at this, they find insignificant amount of change that does not impact the results of elections. That's all I need. That's a common sense, logical approach to all of this stuff. I don't need a Save America Act. And by the way, stop naming your bills in stupid ways like that. Just give it a number. What is up with that? Big, beautiful bill. Just call it a budget bill. It's stupid. And the more stupid things, and I'm one of them, I'm a Republican. I identify that way. I vote that way 99% of the time. It makes me angry. That's my speech. Break. All right, here's something different. We haven't done this on the Friday show. My friend Steve Shamraz, journalist at TMJ4 Milwaukee, our partners, is on the hotline and has some comments about, I know you've done reporting on this. Welcome.
I've done a ton of reporting on this. Thank you for having me. Sorry to have to call in. But when I know and I like everybody in that studio right now. I know every one of you personally, and I hate to hear people yelling at each other. So I'm going to jump in with a couple of capital T truths I have learned in my decades as an investigative reporter. I have looked personally at about 2 million voter records in three different states, Missouri and Illinois. I pulled 2004 records when I worked down there. And Wisconsin, I looked at about 800 and some thousand 2012 voter records. My goal was to find dead people who have voted. So I found, and I thought I had some great stories here, out of the 2 million or so records I found about 800 and some matches. In every single one of those matches, there was always a reasonable explanation for how it happened. There was a data entry error. There was human error. There was a similar name. It was always explainable. And what I've learned from looking at about two, and we sliced and diced this data six ways to Sunday. You know, when you hear the Secretary of Homeland Security saying he's found 250,000 matches with illegal immigrants, you found a match. You haven't proven it. You've got to do the steps beyond that. You have to verify what you have found. And we don't know what that next step is. I thought I had great stories of dead people voting. I didn't. Because in all of those matches, there were reasonable explanations. And, you know, I
love the fact that you're joining us live, because that's awesome. And thanks for the listen. But another example why real journalism matters.
Because if mom tells you zombies are voting, check it out. That's the line, right, Jamie?
You've got it. You've got it. If your mother tells you love you, if your mother says she loves you, check it out. That's the truth. In 2004, Jake will know the name Scott Martin. he's got a big role in the Trump administration right now. Scott Martin worked in St. Louis when I was down there. He was very concerned with what I was doing. He took me to lunch and wanted to talk about what we were doing. And he was a little stunned that all those dead people actually were easily explainable. That, you know, he signed on the wrong line in the voter roll, because you show up and you got to sign the book. He signed the wrong line in the book. Or, you know, it's a father-son situation where the name is the same. I found an example here in Wisconsin. Guy's first wife dies, and he marries, his first wife was Jean E. Carrillo, I believe. He married another woman with the first name Jean, middle initial E, took his name. And so she became Jean E. Carrillo number two. That was a match. She would have been flagged as a dead voter and, you know, somebody voting illegally. You have to do the next step to prove that something has happened. And what we're seeing is the big headline numbers. Oh, my God, 250,000 voters. You've got to do the next step to verify it.
All right.
Because in-person voter fraud is extremely rare.
I love the fact that you took the time to call. I love the work that you do on TMJ4, our partners here at 620.
Thanks, guys.
Keep up the good work. Thanks for calling in.
All right, with that.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for listening. All right, when we come back, we got more show. We still got a half hour with the guys. Stay with us.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bryan.
All right, everyone has refilled their coffee, taken a breath. As one of the texters said, I didn't know I was getting spicy margaritas this morning.
I'm just winding everybody up to the weekend.
So if you did not hear the first hour, that is a word for it. It was spicy, it was passionate, but that we barely touched, like, scratched the surface of how many other things happened this week, including confirmation hearings, including a senator dying unexpectedly, another senator baby still being alive. And so let's just do a DC grab bag as far as where we are, as we are, what, 100 and some days from the midterms?
If you are the incumbent party that controls all three branches of government, you would like to be at this point demonstrating an ability to govern and or do anything. Instead, I mean, it's probably the level of chaos in the Democratic primary for governor of Wisconsin and the level of chaos in Washington, D.C. right now are actually pretty comparable. Mike Johnson can't get rules passed. They got four holdout members on the House. They got nominees going up to the Senate who can't answer yes, no questions. Because of the passing of Graham, the budget committee, which is pretty important right now, and then there's also a judiciary committee because they're trying to get Blanche confirmed as AG. It is a mess. And I am reminded of, I think it was the Rick Wilson book, like, everything Trump touches dies. Whether it's the reflecting pool madness, whether it's what's going on at Capitol Hill, it's the incredible shrinking presidency as was on full display in that ridiculous speech last night.
Jake, what are you paying attention to in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting take by Joe, and I guess convenient in the sense that we're forgetting when it comes to the Senate and who's going to retain the majority heading into the next year, you have a main race where there still is no candidate. In arguably the most important swing race, and a party that's probably, I almost feel bad for the main Dems in the sense that clearly nobody did vetting on an absolutely, I hope we can all agree, a horrible candidate with just horrible baggage. And then you look at Michigan. I just read an article this morning. What we're seeing in Wisconsin between kind of the socialist wing and the traditional, maybe moderate wing of the Democratic Party is playing out in a statewide race. I know, Joe, you've made the point that this socialist kind of rise is only in blue state, blue city congressional seats. That's no longer the case. We have a statewide gubernatorial race in Wisconsin. You have a U.S. Senate race in Michigan.
They haven't won anything yet. That was my point.
Well, and you look at, we all agree, I think, that it's either going to be Hong or Barnes, and I think it's going to be Hong. You look at Minnesota, it seems like the energy is behind the socialist candidate for U.S. Senate as opposed to the more traditional, maybe pro-business candidate, who is, I think, a congresswoman. So, I mean, these are now starting to play out at the statewide level. And so if you're going to say there's dysfunction in D.C. right now, yes, I wish they were getting more done as well. But there's some issues with the Dems when it comes to the Senate.
One of the byproducts of doing a show like this is you get to watch a lot of talking heads talk about politics. And somebody, and I don't know who he was. He was a smart guy, commentator on one of the networks. I don't know which one. Said, when you drain a swamp, it's going to be really messy for a while. Things aren't going to work well. Is that an argument you could make in defense of this administration? Look, we cleared house. We clean house. We have to like reconstruct, put our people in place, get the Congress the way we want, win those elections. Is that part of this argument that they're trying to make?
I mean, I think that's part of the argument. I will say something I noticed that interesting in one of the hearings yesterday actually came from a Republican who was kind of dumping on DOGE, where, you know, I think the number was $250 billion in savings. And it was almost like, you know, Republicans and Democrats were poo-pooing that number. I mean, I think one of the efforts in the Trump administration that's been positive, and you saw this in the Walker administration, was let's do a ground up, you know, ground floor review of every agency, administrative rules that are duplicative, that pass costs onto the taxpayer. Like, those reviews are not a bad thing. I don't quite understand why. I mean, you know, we do this in the private sector, but government, we're not supposed to do that.
Far be it for me to answer for the administration, but when you do reviews like that, audit reviews, they have to be done by serious people. And when we saw DOGE was not conducted by serious people. Quick break. Say something nice. Well, that should be interesting today.
Yeah. You keep saying your side is better. It's time to
say something nice
about the other side of the political aisle on Point Taken.
Come on, people now. Smile.
All right, who's got something nice to say? Jake?
I'll say something nice about Lindsey Graham. one of only two gentlemen to hold that Senate seat in, like, literally the last 100 years.
Yeah.
And somebody who got a lot of things done and had a demonstrated capacity throughout his career to work across the aisle, including with people like Joe Biden when they were both in the Senate. It's tragedy to lose somebody who is still working towards the very end on things that I think are central to who we are as America. He was trying to get Russia sanctions and like working up to the moment of his untimely passing. And so that is too bad. He will be missed. Rest in peace.
Well said. Jake Curtis.
I feel like I'm always cheating in this segment. John Fetterman and Dave McCormick apparently doing a joint fundraising operation.
Did we figure out what that's for yet?
No, but
like, if they're building a school, huzzah, that's great. Right.
What's the nice part of this?
Well, the nice part is you see somebody like Fetterman who, I mean, this is interesting. Okay, my serious point here is I think Fetterman is such an interesting individual because it's not like he really has moderated all that much. And again, I know this is my consistent theme here, is how far left the Democratic Party has gone. But if you look at Fetterman, it's not like all of a sudden he's become some extreme moderate, almost right-of-center legislator. He's still relatively progressive, but there's a few issues like support for Israel and things like that. He's essentially being expelled from the Democratic Party. I think he's still a self-proclaimed Democrat, and he's doing a joint fundraising operation with the Republican senator from Pennsylvania. So interesting development there, and credit for John, I guess, for thinking independently.
But we don't know what it's for?
I think there is a political component. I mean, that's just...
But it's not for their own war chest. It's for, like, a...
I think it might
initiative?
Be... I'm trying to read.
Get back to us.
I'll get back to you, but it's interesting.
I have two.
Ooh, wow.
I have two. So I am more to come after I get back from vacation next week. But I was tapped by the Alliance, Wisconsin Alliance for Retired Americans, to help them do their interviews for governor. And from the Republican side, Tom Tiffany did not choose to be interviewed, but Andy Manske did. And so I got to meet Andy Manske. He was the other Republican on the ticket. And you know what? As someone who was married to a person who threw his name in the hat for a race that he likely was not going to win, which I would say is the case for Andy, it takes a lot of guts to put yourself out there. And so it was nice to meet him and hear how the campaign is going for him. And then the other one is Eric Erickson, the conservative commentator. He wrote a pretty damning Substack this week. And he called it out. He's like, I know I'm going to lose followers over this. But he said, drain the swamp. Don't recycle the water for our side. Mm. Basically calling out, like, it's been 10 years of us saying we're draining the swamp. And what have we actually gotten done? And so kudos to him as far as calling it like he sees it and telling on his own side.
Drain the swamp getting a lot of attention on the show today. I'm picking maybe not a surprise. I mentioned him earlier, Joe Brennan. Other than maybe Kelda Royce, he's not a Dem who has like fiscal questions, irresponsibility, late payments, whatever. He doesn't make bizarre statements on social media. He's just running a race. Now, I'm under no illusion that Joe Brennan is going to be the candidate for Democrats. I just admire people who one step up, all of them. It's not easy, including your husband. Not easy to do.
Yeah.
It's a commitment. But when you run a race that has class, and I call him in my notes, I call him a class act, and that is Joel Brennan. I said to him in person when he sat here, Kristen, I think you were off that week, and I interviewed him for a half hour. For an impromptu interview, not knowing the questions in advance, he's the best communicator in this race. I don't care what anyone else says. That's my takeaway. Awesome communicator, great resume. Would he make a great governor? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out. But he's one of those candidates, four, maybe five. We'll see what Crowley does. I give him respect for running a great race. Not an endorsement. Let's take a break after the after we get back. What are you laughing about? Grab
me. You're laughing too.
I am too.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
All right, Joseph Pecky, what is in your grab bag?
Go see The Odyssey. It is epic. It is incredible. It is so well done. It is long, but you know what? Great excuse with the smoky air out there to go hide inside a cinema for 3 hours. Check out The Odyssey. Ten out of ten.
What performance, acting performance, was stood out to you?
Matt Damon's and Himesh Patel's.
Oh.
Interesting.
All right.
I think I've seen it right. Saturday. The Station 11 guy, right? Himesh Patel?
I think so.
That sounds right, yeah. Amazing cast. And Christopher Nolan never makes a bad movie, in my opinion. Jake?
So I was going to go movie, but you kind of stole that, Joe.
Are you going to see it this weekend?
We're trying to figure it out. Yeah, my brother-in-law really wants to go. I think I put in a plug for Pressure, which is amazing. Did I do that on the show?
I don't think so.
What is Pressure?
Pressure is it's about the meteorologist advising Eisenhower prior to D-Day. Amazing.
Well, where is it at? Right? Apple TV?
I think it's on Amazon. We'll check. I saw it in theaters. Amazing.
Just Pressure.
And I'll put in this plug because apparently I've been talking about my wife a lot today. She's not into like action movies. I'm not really spoiling anything. There's about 2 minutes of actual, you know, D-Day footage. The rest of it is essentially a drama set in the JFHQ, the Joint Forces Command in England. It's more a drama about what they had to do. And interestingly, in 1960, as Eisenhower is exiting office, they asked, what was your advantage on D-Day? And he said, we had better meteorologists than the Germans.
My dad would agree with that because he's a meteorologist and he worked for the U.S. Air Force and the National Weather Service. Kristen.
All right. Well, I'm also going to see Odyssey this weekend. I'm also off next weekend. We are taking the car ferry to Michigan, which we've never taken before.
Awesome.
So I'm very excited about that. But we're going to Muskegon, Grand Haven.
You're going to Grand Rapids?
We're not going to. Well, we could, I guess, because we'll have our car.
It's a little more of a drive.
But also New Buffalo. So if you have any recommendations of things to do on the Michigan coast of Lake Michigan, let me know. 855-616-1620.
Great beaches is what I know.
Hopefully the smoke will be cleared by next week.
And good call not going in the wintertime because they're buried in snow from the lake effect snow that they get all the time on that side. So mine is we finally, because of all this wildfire smoke, have I used for all those N95 masks. I looked at my closet. We had two boxes of these things.
Really?
Two boxes. Talk about a wife who's prepared for anything. Like, so they're just sitting there. I thought, you know, I didn't wear one. I was going to go work in my garden yesterday and it was thick and I was going to put one on. So if you have respiratory issues, go in your closet or wherever you kept these things in your bedroom, under your bed, and use those N95s because this smoke is not good for us. So be healthy.
We're just running it.
Yeah. Jake went out. How long was the run, by the way?
4 miles.
Like, what are you doing?
And it didn't hurt your lungs or you weren't coughing?
No, it was fine.
I was out for 2 hours. My voice was scratchy just from. I felt like I smoked cigarettes. And you're running in this, breathing.
Yeah, I smelled like smoke, which was
weird. Isn't that wild? So be careful out there. Let's do some fun stuff. So you just saw The Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
What's the movie you saw before that?
Oh,
you see a lot of movies.
Spider-Man: Brand New Day is next. It was not that long ago.
Like, is there a new Spider-Man?
There it's is a new July 31st. Yeah, Tom Holland and Zendaya. Big summer for the newlyweds.
Are they're married and they're in the same movie together?
And with both. They're in two movies together. They're in Odyssey together and they're in Spider-Man.
Toy Story 5.
I heard it's fantastic. Yeah, you saw it with Frankie.
You love it?
I mean, it's not as good as the others.
I've heard people say it's better.
No. I would not say. I think my ranking goes 1, 2, 3, 5, 4.
I mean, 5. How do you know them that almost well? Like so
I have
deep.
A 2.5-year-old.
So if you have a kid, you know Toy Story
I know
well.
One and maybe two, and that's it.
I saw Disclosure Day and Supergirl in June, The Odyssey, and Spider-Man.
What's the space movie that you love that's now on streaming?
Interstellar?
No, that's a great movie.
That came out more recently?
Yeah. You remember with their alien creature?
Project Hail Mary.
Yeah. Now it's available on streaming, so I'm going to watch it this weekend.
Oh, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. One of the things that we talk about on this show is how great this Friday thing is, and thanks to Jake Curtis for filling in this Friday, because not easy. It was a fantastic 90 minutes. We have a great guest coming up that I think is going to be worth everyone's time. Just another great example of what you can do.
It's a great way to end, to step away from politics. Vin Noth is here, who's the executive director of Kinship, and we're going to talk about the new building that they broke ground on this week. But as far as, moving past politics and actually doing the work to help people.
And do not forget, and don't sleep on our newsletter, text the word extra, E-X-T-R-A. Why do I say that? Because I have exclusive Sal Frelick content. I interviewed him the other day. That's the only place you can get it for a while on our newsletter. Comes out Sunday morning. It's a one a weeker. We don't bombard you. It's fun. Chris and I spent a lot of time putting it together. This week's is almost done. It's just a fun thing. Go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, I don't know when I'll be on next. You know, this is always kind of a last second thing. Maybe it just popped in my head. My grab bag really should have been Brewers are back in town starting the second half. I am telling you right now, I born in 1982, gone to a lot of crummy Brewers games over the years. This and we've had success the last 10 years. I think this is the team that's going to beat the Dodgers and win the World Series because I think the AL is weak this year.
Hot sports take.
So that's my take. This is a year.
All right, so you made that bold statement. Why do you think that?
Because basically you have one team. I mean, the Braves are good, but the Dodgers...
Well, Dodgers are also good.
That's what I'm saying. You have one team you need to get past, I think, and that's the Dodgers. I think the Brewers can do that, and the AL is weak. I think you have the pitching, you have the timely hitting, you have some amazing... I mean, it's basically everybody they call up. Lara comes through with a game-winning hit, before... Yeah. What was it, last week? I mean, basically everybody they're bringing up is performing.
You an analytics guy? I'm going to send you a story about the Brewers clutch hitting.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, in the last 30 seconds, any predictions as what's going to happen between now and Monday on Wisconsin politics?
Nope.
Joe's
I'm just taking breaths. Hey, Democrats, figure it out.
I'll put my, even though I'm not a Democrat, I'm going to say Crowley's coming back in.
I think Crowley's coming back in.
Tom Tiffany continues to be the front runner to win the gubernatorial race.
He just smiles. Got plenty of money. He's ready to go.
Raise money and smile.
Yeah. I'm actually going to a sportsman's event, a wild game dinner, and he's the guest speaker. So I'll see him in a couple weeks. All right, gentlemen, Joseph Pecky, have a fantastic weekend. Jay Curtis, thanks as always. You're a pro's pro now. You've done enough. Lead counsel, corporate counsel at IRG, Institute for Reforming Government.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry, Steve Scafidi, and let's take a breath, take a step back from politics and talk about something that's close to my heart. This week on Wednesday, Kinship Community Food Center had their formal groundbreaking for their new home, and they publicly launched the next phase of the Building a Place for Kinship capital campaign. So they are going to be on the corner of Holton and Locust, which was an empty lot, and there's going to be a brand new beautiful building. We touched on this a little bit yesterday with Jeremy Janine, but as I've mentioned before, I have started volunteering there. It is their current location is a couple blocks from our house, and I am just so impressed always with what they preach, what they do. And so Vincent Noth is here with us in studio because we talked to you last year during the SNAP food crisis.
Yeah.
But it was over the phone. So this is the first time we've gotten you in
the
studio.
It's fun to be in the studio. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So I guess, how has this week gone? How has the reception been as far as the big launch and the groundbreaking?
It's amazing. I mean, we're all over the place in print, and we're really grateful for the opportunity to tell our story. We think it's a unique story, a story that all of Milwaukee needs to hear about. I was really also impressed by our county executive, David Crowley, and then our mayor, both were at our kickoff. And they both got up and shared personally about their experience, like growing up in generational poverty and with hunger. So it was a powerful event. We had a lot of residents get up and share. But it's for me, it's also incredible to just stand on that land. Do you know what I mean? And know that, I mean, we started our campaign, our quiet phase of our campaign about 16 months ago to raise $18 million. We've raised 86% of that. We've raised over $15.5 million.
I said this to Kristen yesterday. What I love about your story and Kitchen's story, it's an example, a clear, direct example of what you can do. You have a goal. You certainly have a mission that people respect and appreciate and want to be a part of. And then you get it done. That's so affirming to me as somebody who does care about this stuff, that we have need in the community. And then you have organizations like yours that just say, okay, let's do it.
That's
and you
so
get
great.
It done.
Thank
I love
you.
That.
Thank you so much. I mean, I think the biggest thing that we fight, especially in Milwaukee, when we think about some of the entrenched issues around poverty, is apathy. You know, and what's interesting is if I go give a talk to a bunch of middle school students about poverty rates in Milwaukee, they organize a food drive. You know, when I talk to sometimes adults, they're like, well, it's been like this forever and the systems are like this. And I one time was giving a talk to a bunch of folks about this. And I had a guy say this. Let's be honest. He raised his hand. He goes, none of this is ever going to change. He's like, these systems are so broken. They're so entrenched. And I was thinking, OK, he took all the wind out of my talk. And all of a sudden, this other guy raises his hand and he goes, sir, what you just said is a logical fallacy. And I'm like, take it away, sir.
You know? You
and he said, I'm a systems engineer. My company goes into municipalities and businesses and we look at the systems that they're trying to improve. And we then go back to our boss and we say, this is 1 6-month contract. We can really help this. He goes, sometimes we go back. This is like a 3-year contract. But he says to the guy, you know what we never say? There's nothing we can do about this.
Hmm.
4 out of 10 kids in the city of Milwaukee live below the poverty line. And we go, nothing we can do, as opposed to saying it could be 3.5 out of 10. It could be 2 out of 10, you know.
I was talking to a parish priest yesterday for a series I'm doing with faith leaders about faith and politics, but I loved his mission was, I never accept that sort of answer. He goes, why would we ever accept that? And the fact that you have sort of figured that out, and sometimes we just need someone to say, oh, why would we take that as an example? That, to me, is the cool part.
Well, for people who are unfamiliar, so for a very long time, for most of its existence, it was the River West Food Pantry.
That's
but
right.
It was under your leadership that you kind of identified the shift of food being the end answer versus the opening to more opportunity beyond just like feeding you today. And so talk a little bit more about what the shift to kinship has been and like the umbrella of services you guys now provide.
Sure, yeah. So 47 years it's been there in the basement of St. Casimir and at the Gensland Public School for a while it was there. About 14 years ago, we launched it as a nonprofit with two animating ideas. One was, what if food was an entry point, a catalyst to community change, as opposed to just distributing food? And the other one is even more important than the first, which is, what if we didn't go to the margins just to try to make a difference, but what if we went to the margins so that the folks at the margins made us different? And that second one, that North Star, is why there's all this energy, because people come into our center and we immediately say, hey, everybody's here to receive something. You know, no one gets to where they are all on their own. You know what I mean? And so we invite people into an experience of getting wrecked, of having their eyes opened. And let me just give you one quick example of what that looks like. So we have, as I was mentioning, we have this team of people that are doing crisis assistance, volunteers that work with two social workers, and we triage a ton of need. We helped 70 people find housing last year. And it's just neighborhood residents helping each other. So we had this resident that was working with this woman that struggles with paranoid schizophrenia. And he was going and meeting her at public housing and helping her go to CVS or get her toiletries or whatever. And he was frustrated. And so because he'd go there and she'd say, meet me at 9 o'clock, and then she'd sometimes wouldn't come down, or she'd come down in the elevator. There's times she'd come down in the elevator and then turn around and go back in the elevator and go up. And so he said, then all of it shifted for me one day when we were checking out at a Walgreens or something. And the clerk, this young clerk, said, ma'am, your change. She's just sitting there blank. Ma'am, your change. And he's kind of rude. Ma'am, your change is right here. And she said, I'm sorry. I have 4 different voices in my head and it takes me time to know which voice is yours.
Wow.
Mm. So let's talk about everyone gives, everyone receives. Here's the shift. He went from being like, ah, this is charitable stuff I got to do to help this lady, to standing in awe of this lady. Like, I mean, everybody wants to meet a Giannis, right? Or meet an athlete because they're doing something extraordinary. But what the poor in our city are doing something extraordinary every day. And that, once you get that little shift, that we don't go to the margins, we go to the margins to be changed. And our measure of success is in how much we see ourselves in kinship with the people, to begin to say, oh my gosh, like I can get derailed if like my lawnmower breaks and my brakes go out in the same week. And I'm like, I just can't believe how hard my life is, you know? And there's this there's women in my community, single moms, I've walked with through two or three evictions in a 5 to 10 year period. So we at Kinship say, no, we come to stand in awe of the burden that people carry instead of standing in judgment of the way they might be carrying it.
Oh, awesome work you're doing. Let's take a break. There's a website you can go, because you're still raising money.
We're still raising money.
To get to that goal, it's www.buildingaplaceforkinship.org. If you text us 855-616-1620, we'll send you a link as well. We'll continue the conversation after this on 620 WTMJ. Vincent Noth, President and CEO of Kinship, is joining us for the next few minutes. Great story, and I just sent out the email, or the website rather, www.buildingaplaceforkinship.org. Two questions. Is our community generous? And two, is your model sort of the way you see this, you never say fixed resolve, but it's sort of answering some of these questions in these concerns over the, you know, the life of our country, really?
Sure, that's great. Yeah, the first one is like a strong yes. I'll just tell you, nobody likes to do fundraising. Or if you do like it, maybe there might be something a little bit off with you, but I have had such an incredible experience raising money in this city over the last 16 months. Now, I've been raising money for Kinship for 15 years, but I have sat down with people and we've all broken down in tears. Because I mean, especially some of the philanthropists in town, I said, would you consider $500,000? And they're like, we're giving you $1 million.
Oh,
wow.
Do you know what I mean? I've had that experience. And so there is a lot of means in Milwaukee, and there is a lot of generosity. But I think people need to be inspired to believe that it's going to make a change, because, you know, as I just said, like it can feel like things are stuck. And as far as the second question about the model, you know, that second idea is, how can food be a catalyst? And food is so incredible to build commonality between people. Like, we do collaborative meals. Like there's a feast meal on our farm. We have a 27,000 square foot hoop house farm right off the freeway. You see it on Port Washington Road between I-43 and Port Washington,
cool,
just north of the Capitol. And we grow 20,000 pounds of organic.
I got to come
produce
and visit that farm and put it on my outdoor show.
There you go.
I would love it. It's incredible. And especially in the spring and the fall, because it's warm in those hoop houses. But, you know, we do like collaborative cooking. We do air fryer classes. Every time we've turned the basement of this church, you know, into a little public market, and there's chefs doing demos, and it's a place where people come and food just gathers you. And then through the food, we get to know each other. And now through the food, we're hiring people. So we launched Kinship Cafe about 2 years ago. It's in the Thrive on King building. And then in this new building that we're going to break, that we just broke ground on and that we'll move into next summer, we're launching two more businesses. And let's just get this. We're hiring folks that are unhoused. Or about a third of the people we have hired are unhoused at the time of hire. We're hiring people right out of prison in the rearview mirror, they have a long history of addiction. And a third of the time at work, we say it's a train on the clock, heel on the clock model. A third of their time at work is working on themselves. Because in all the crisis work we've done, we started to say we got to find a more lasting way, a holistic way to help people have long-standing employment. So, this is a model. I think especially the first part about learning to come to service with receptivity, because our city is so segregated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done real damage to us in our ability to encounter each other and see each other. And so, with food as a catalyst, we see this as a flagship. There's a lot of other pantries, community food centers, community food hubs starting to pop up now. And Kinship's been at the forerunner in Milwaukee, and we think it's a replicable model.
So as far as the building that you just broke ground on. Can you describe a little bit more for the listeners as far as what's going to be in there? What is it going to look like? What are the new businesses?
Yeah, so it's a 28,000 square foot community food center. It's the first of its kind. We learned about this model in Toronto and in, you know, Pittsburgh and all these different places. So it'll have a free public market that's open double the amount that will be open right now. It has this beautiful community space with all of these adjacent partner spaces. So the like preventative health partnerships that we have, or the mental health partnerships, or people to get their GED or to get legal resources. And then it also will be launching two more businesses. Like I said, we're scaling a catering business and an events business. And then those work trainees do all their classwork in there. And then there's a teaching greenhouse. And there's a beautiful little prayer space in there, a chapel in there. We did a lot of listening in the community. And we've been at St. Casimir 47 years. And a lot of people said, I love it that I can go into a quiet space. So it's going to be spectacular. And when it's done and people come all in one place, they're going to see how food can become an entry point to build like a social ecosystem to really transform lives.
And how much more money are you still trying to raise?
So we're still in need of about $2.5 million. And we have a lot of strong momentum. But yeah, buildingaplaceforkinship.org is how you can learn more about the campaign. And we need all oars in the water helping us get over this finish line.
Thanks for providing an example to people of things they can do. It's a tremendous example, tremendous org. I can't wait to get out there and do some work or some real work. Keep doing it. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break here on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. You know, as heated as that first 90 minutes was, it's great to have a calming...
Right? I thought that'd be a nice way to end the week.
What a great org. I mean, Kinship is doing unbelievable.
I can't wait for you to go with me.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I've done similar things like that. And I always walk away a better person.
Because there's two... I mean, there's multiple opportunities, but there's both the being there for the nights that they do shopping and the food... Tuesday nights and Saturday mornings. You also might like going and volunteering at the garden.
Yeah, as soon as I heard him say that, that's like, ooh.
I've heard that's much more calm.
Well, perfect. I love gardening.
I will say the Tuesday nights, it's a lot of people. It's a cramped space because that's obviously why they're building a new building, because they have outgrown the space that they're in. But it's fun. It's just it's a different than the calming activity of gardening.
I've never met a hoop house I didn't fall in love with. They grow things, and you can expand your growing season. You're going to be off next week.
I'm off next week.
So enjoy your vacation. Don't think about work. For all those folks who love this show, and we appreciate all of you for listening every day and finding us online, wherever that is, text the word extra or find us at the bottom of the homepage that you can subscribe to the newsletter extra. This week's special bonus content, my interview with Sal Frelick. The only place you can get it on Sunday is that newsletter. So find it, enjoy it. He was awesome to talk to. And I'll tell you more about his great event that he's doing in the community. Another one of these great, great ideas that are going to help people. I'll tell you, a little advance notice, Best Buddies, one of my favorite orgs as well. Have a great vacation.
See you in a week and a half-ish.
Yeah, ish. News is next.